That's
where
right.
Sign
Oh, they'll ask that question. Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglin from the offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles, in the middle of the Eastern Columbia building. That is where the offices are of Rational Exuberance. I have full circle on that. I'm Dean Haglin. This is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. And beside me, as always, your Mr. Phil Lernest, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm beside myself, actually. I'm beside myself.
So you're over where I am.
I'm having so much trouble with technology right now. It was a long weekend.
It was. For
yeah, finished shooting on this short film Appearances. And
where I was, too.
You did a wonderful little cameo.
My pleasure.
15-hour shoot on Saturday.
Hilarious.
Much easier shoot yesterday, as it turned out. It was a beautiful way to end the film. We actually did the funniest scene in the movie, of which you were a part,
yep.
And the most important scene in the movie after that.
Look at that.
Those were the two scenes we did yesterday. It was really the key, critical, dramatic scene upon which kind of... I feel like the film has maybe a... It has a three-act structure, even though it's a short film, but it really is kind of the key turning point moment where everything from that point forward... You know, if we believe it, we have to find that turning point in that scene that
right.
we did last night. And I feel like we did on the very last shot. So
excellent.
That was very cool. But your cameo, we don't want to give away too much about this. But you, of course, had already been involved in the film by doing the storyboards.
I have.
You got a great response from that.
I did. I'm very encouraged to continue storyboarding.
In fact, one of the producers, Marcus Wolf, is planning on framing all the storyboards.
Is that right?
Keeping them in his place.
Yeah. A little 18-frame picture thing.
So you were already involved in that way, and then you came on to do a little cameo as an actor. And... I don't think I appreciate. I mean, I knew that it would be fun because you get a really good moment. You know, it's
right.
just a really fun moment that you want to have pop from a story level. I don't think I appreciated what a couple of the people around us appreciated, which was really, you know, the true nature of it as a cameo given your history. When I saw the delight on the face of the first assistant director, Jonathan Browning.
Right.
And heard about how our sound mixer, Dan, was laughing out in the corridor outside. And it was funny, but what was, you know, and don't you appreciate that for, like, self-identified geeks like us, they basically said, I'm not calling them geeks, but
right.
for sci-fi nerds, sci-fi geeks, how great it is that Dean Haglin suddenly turns around in a frame to correct somebody about the rules of vampires on television. Like, who better than Langley? But that you're wearing a suit and tie just kind of makes it the Rod Serling, you know, like...
I know. I thought everybody...
Hi, you might know me as TV's Dean Haglund.
You're in the
and
urinal.
I'm here simply to correct you. It's almost like the great Woody Allen bit in Annie Hall.
Yeah,
when he pulls Marshall McLuhan out from behind the board.
You have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it felt kind of like that, you know, for fans.
Hilarious.
So it's just this nice added little level.
No.
And I think it's okay because that scene, no matter how you approached it, it's funny.
It has to be funny.
It's going to be funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, that's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing this thing and being finally corrected that it's not a zombie movie.
Yeah.
In fact, a vampire movie. So that's going to be thrilling. And what's the editing timeline now? What's the future goals for this thing? Do you know?
I don't know. You know, here's an every time there's new things that you do. I mean, you know, you and I are both very do-it-yourself in our approach to life and
mm-hmm.
to our art. You know, but here's something that I'd never encountered before. I don't think I'd shot in HD before on Spectres, which we did. And, of course, our documentary.
Mm-hmm.
However, our documentary, I was doing the sound mixing in camera, as it were, in camera. And in Spectres, there was a sound mixer, but the feed was going direct to the camera. So it was being recorded as a DAT backup, but also being fed to the HD tapes, the HD cam, I think we were recording on.
Right.
This time, I would use the interior mics just as a reference, and we're running time code and we're slating, but it's almost like going back to the old film days in that picture and audio are going to have to be synced up before we even have dailies.
Isn't that wild?
And that will be quite a lengthy process because we shot a lot for a short film,
yeah,
it's it was quite the epic short film.
Right. I mean, right. A lot of takes.
I would say that we probably came away with, I don't know, anywhere from 10 to 12 hours.
Holy.
Of HD footage for a 20-minute documentary.
Yikes. Don't want to be in that edit room. But now when you're, let's talk technical for a moment. I saw them plug in a little something into the clapperboard. I thought that was a digital sync up for the audio and the...
Yes, so the time code. So all you need to do is go and match the time code.
Right.
So it still does have to be done manually, though.
Right.
And here's the interesting thing. You know, you've worked in Final Cut.
I have.
Have to find an application. We've heard that there is such a thing, or software, that will allow you to permanently marry that sound to the picture. Because think about what you know about Final Cut Pro.
Slides all over.
Right. There's the sound that is married to it is the sound that you import with the picture.
Yeah.
You can always remove that and lay other sound in, but then what happens if you cut the picture? It's all independent from that point on. So that can cause a lot of problems. You want it to be, fundamentally, you want the audio and the picture to be locked, except when you choose to unlock it.
Right. Not when it's a slippery.
So that's another step that is kind of unique in this. Because, of course, when I was shooting on film, 35mm, let's say, you would bring the film to the telecine and your dailies would be synced there.
Just like that.
And then you would probably either get, depending on how long ago it was, you'd be getting a videotape, some kind of beta format, or you'd be getting a digital file or whatever. But for your purposes in the editing room, once the lab had synced all the dailies,
the audio
and picture was locked.
Well, now that we lost our entire listening audience to this technical jargon.
No, I think that we have people out there who are filmmakers, who are making a great deal of their, who are do-it-yourself
much as we are.
One of the reasons I'm beside myself is my do-it-yourself tendencies do not simply lend themselves towards filmmaking, right? I mean, here I was a directing, co-producing, and director of photography, camera operator, as I had been on, of course, Karl Rove, I Love You, and on the documentary.
Yes.
But this is the first narrative, truly narrative piece where I had done both. So that was kind of exercising different muscles. Anyway, today I had some bathroom repairs that I was doing.
Your DIY.
The plumber's crack I was enjoying was my own. Kids, don't smoke plumber's crack. It's a ghetto drug.
And it's so hard to light.
So I was doing that. And might I say, I was doing a phenomenal job. I mean, you may not think of Phil Lernis as, you know, Mr. Handyman.
I don't.
And at the same time, though, truly, as with computers, as with filmmaking, as with cooking, right?
Yes.
If you enjoy learning new things.
As one does.
And can not only follow instructions and have the patience to read instructions, but also to know how to trust your own intuition and your own sense of logic.
It's so easy.
Because a lot of times the instructions, as you've talked about before, are not logical.
Right.
And therefore, ultimately lead you in the wrong direction.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, you stop and ask yourself, there's got to be a better way to do this. Can we figure out the better way to do this? So, fixing the toilet, no problem. Having no problem at all. Till kind of the very end.
Uh-huh.
When I reach up to get something I need, you know, put a cap on something, and pull my BlackBerry torch right down into the bowl.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The old cell phone in the toilet. And was it
the really expensive cell phone in the toilet? I mean, I got that out so fast. And again, as I was telling you before we started rolling, thank goodness I had fixed the toilet, flushed the toilet, and fully cleaned the toilet before doing it, or else we'd have a lot more problems with the BlackBerry. Really, I don't even know if I would want to salvage it.
Right.
Let's just spend the grand on another phone.
Don't want to see
it. I don't want to see it. I'm not putting that anywhere near my pockets or my head ever again. Instead, you could have eaten off that porcelain. But so you know what I did with the phone? I mean, immediately.
Well, the first thing you know, you're not supposed to turn it on. That's the first.
It was
thing.
On.
Oh,
but it was on.
It has a fail safety shutoff when it's about to be shorted out.
Oh, that's nice. I think it started to maybe do that. But what I did was I popped out the battery as fast as I could.
Right.
And then I immersed the cell phone, opened the cell phone because, you know, it's a slide up thing.
Yeah.
And I immersed it in a bag of rice.
So it can dine later, or is that...
See, this is a do-it-yourself trick, and I'm not, this is not an old wives' tale. I may have, at some point in the past, maybe, I'm not going to point fingers at myself, might have been me,
okay.
Could have been someone who resembled me,
right?
Clearly someone very dashing and handsome, might have, at some point, poured a glass of water, inadvertently, with his foot, onto a lady friend's iPhone.
Okay.
Panic about the cost of replacing an iPhone.
Yeah, screams, shrieks.
And quickly looked up, you know, got that thing shut down.
Shut down.
Quickly looked up on all these forums remedies of how to make sure there's no damage. And again, the thing that I kept coming to was immerse it in rice.
How about that?
The rice draws and soaks up the water.
As it that's the nature of rice.
And it worked. And that iPhone, to this day... dare I say it works better. And, of course, it's cleaner. And there's a certain brown rice flavor to it that I always find delicious.
A jasmine basmati.
A jasmine basmati.
Basmati.
Cell phone.
Delicious.
Yeah, ask for it by name. It's that new Steve Jobs approved jasmine basmati app. You're getting a chill pack under your phone.
Under my phone.
Under your phone. I'm having a hard day.
You said this was a long weekend.
Yeah. It's been a long several weeks.
It's been a long...
I mean, we've been
Did worlds?
Keeps going. Just
what
keeps
happened
going.
Last Thursday? My
well,
art
now
opening?
This is... You had, for the first time, it was your debut on Art Walk.
Yes.
Now, Art Walk is a monthly event here in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Downtown Los Angeles. Tour of all these great galleries and storefronts that open as galleries and creative spaces. It's not, I mean, for some people who might live in a different area, you know, I mean, when I think of gallery, I automatically think it's, you know, it's kind of, it makes me feel uncomfortable. Yeah, it's a little elitist. It's not friendly. It's not welcoming. It's not inviting. It's also often when you go to galleries, you know, official galleries and where they sell art. And a lot of times I find that it's the least conducive to viewing the art.
Yes, right?
There isn't any flow to it. There isn't any sense of spacing that gives you a chance to really appraise it, different angles, and take your time with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so downtown, it's great because you have as many different type spaces as you have artists and types of art.
Absolutely. And I've been very fortunate to be in the space that's in the Eastern Columbia building on the ground floor. And it's a very raw space. I mean, the concrete is dusty, the walls are clean, and I am fortunate not only to have it as a gallery of my work, but to have it as a working studio for some larger pieces, including one that's 8 feet by 5 feet, or is it 9 feet high? It's pretty high, that I'm working on for a show in San Francisco. So I'll be working there every day. So anybody who's coming down Broadway can look in through the window, see my
work. It's very obvious that it's your gallery. There's some very cool, I don't want to give anything away, there's some very cool pieces outside that will that show that
show.
It's your space.
At night, it lights up.
One piece lights up that's great.
Four.
There's also a mirror piece outside,
outside.
That's quite fun. Especially for fans of a certain show.
Yeah.
anyway, it was great stuff. So this was your first, you've participated in Art Walk as a viewer.
Yes.
So many times. But what was it like, to be in the center of it this time?
Well, it was fun, actually. I thought it would be more nerve-wracking, but...
How many pieces did you have again?
20, I think. There were 20 pieces plus three that I was working on. So I had my easel and paintbrush in my hand as people walked in. So if ever the conversation waned, I could just turn around and go back to the canvas. So but that never happened. I'd chat the whole time.
No, I have some photos of you painting.
Oh, you do?
So clearly our conversation waned.
I talk to you every day.
I know. No, if ever I need to get your attention on something, really, I just put down microphones and pretend to be recording.
But we're recording?
We're podcasting again?
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, better chat.
Why am I signing papers?
That's how all our production meetings go. But, yeah, some definite interest from restaurants and other buyers. It seemed that there's...
You said buyers. What about from Frohickey? Hello!
Oh, my gosh. Nerd reference 4. But all in all, went really well. And anybody who's in the downtown Los Angeles area, feel free to go by 845 South Broadway and look in the window. And if you see me in there in the back painting, by all means, come on in.
Great.
See? Open invitation. I'll be up there for at least 2 months for sure.
A couple different styles, too. I mean, I don't know really
how to describe it. This is what everybody was saying. They thought it was like three different artists.
There were three different styles. There really are. And the third one that I hadn't, I don't know if I'd seen it before, really, but the Miss Balooniverse.
The Miracle of Miss Balooniverse painting?
Really is a different, direction.
Really?
You, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very interesting. It's very interesting. Anyway, I was very proud of you. It was great.
Thank you, sir.
So,
we'll,
and
we'll
what's
have to put up Miss Balooniverse on our website. How about that? So everybody can see what we're referencing.
I think I found...
I did give it to Natalie. I don't know if I put
it's
it
her profile page. It's her
profile page.
And Natalie Haverstock is
Miss Balooniverse,
lovely lady, super fun, smart, and, and talented. Improved with you in London.
Yes,
old improv, not old. An improv partner from days gone by.
Days gone by,
and
now the top rated,
the top balloon artist.
I know, of all things in the UK, and she tours, like she goes to, I think she went to Egypt to do balloon art, and she goes all through Europe. And it's not just like dogs and stuff. It's hats. It's
Well, Dean Haglund.
Yeah.
Dean Haglund, a balloon version. If you haven't seen this, you've got to find this. Is this on your Facebook page?
You can connect to it through my Facebook page.
All right. Maybe I'll get this on. I'll get both of these on Facebook.com/ChillPackHollywood, where you can be a liker of the show.
Be
we
a
hope
liker.
That you are. I will put these paintings on there at some point in the next couple of days. The Miss Balooniverse painting that you did, and the photo of you with the balloon creation she made of you and for you.
Right, a caricature of me.
Dean Haglund saving the Earth from aliens. It's right. Astonishing.
It's astonishing. It is shocking.
Talk about do it yourself. I mean, I can figure out a lot of stuff, but I don't think I could live long enough to learn how to do that.
I know. That's part of the miracle of what she does, I must say.
Speaking of that, I mean, art, again, is something I think one of the real kicks for you has to be that you get to do it all yourself.
Yeah.
That it is, you know...
A ground up. There's no executive over your shoulder going, more blue, please.
Right. And part of that joy, at least for me, is that no matter where you are at the process, no matter... or if at the end of it you go, oh, I could have done a better job, or it didn't turn out how I liked, or whatever. When it is do it yourself, you always get to, if you're of this mindset, look at it, though, and say, but boy, I know so much more now than I did just a day ago. Look at how much I learned today.
Yeah, I know.
And then that puts you into a much better energy for creating in the future. When did your do-it-yourself... I mean, we talk about this in the film a little bit, like when you were 9 years old making a Tesla coil, or grade nine,
nine years old. Yeah, no.
But where did this do-it-yourself... Where do you recall that kind of first manifesting? I mean, there's a certain degree of it that's true, I think, of all show people that's, hey, let's build a barn and put on a show, right?
Light it and go.
But where did it first manifest, and what do you think...
Good question.
Kind of inspired it. What in your background really?
Well, my dad, of course, built our home garage. He was he built all our furniture. We had a bunk bed that he built. You know, so he was big on the handyman side. So you know, I learned a lot from that. I had to dismantle a Datsun B210 station wagon all by myself. When I was 14 or 13 one winter, just for parts, which is great. If you ever take a car apart from just driving it into the garage to here's a bunch of tools, have this in pieces by the end of the month, that is so much fun because you don't really have to know how it's going to go back together. You just have to take all the components apart and catalog and put them on shelves, and it's all good.
Isn't that what kids do? I mean, at least I remember doing this, like when mom and dad were done with something, like you're done with the tape recorder, or whatever the technology was, or the clock, you take it apart.
Take it apart and look at it, and like all the parts, And there's, that's, so I did that, and then of course, you know, as a junior inventor of traps and spring-loaded things that would pop when you stepped on them and that sort of thing, I think that also manifested a lot, is that do-it-yourself. But where did the actual, that muscle develop that you speak of? I think it's always been there. I think it's got to be ingrained genetically in one's code. Because if you don't enjoy it, if it seems like a hassle or you really want to farm out all this stuff, then, you know, you have a different goal set than someone who really enjoys a do-it-yourself sort of thing. Which is sort of why, you know, some film and television products really don't do it for you, because you sort of, as an actor, go in, say your lines and leave, and then this whole creative process goes on without you in a network setting, and you're like, well, it's kind of unfulfilling that way.
It's really interesting that when I first graduated film school, and even when I would say I made my first feature, there was always this kind of nagging thought in the back of my head that I had no marketable skills. Like, even in those horrible times when, like, it was so tough and so beating me down, and you know, my parents, who were so supportive in every way, but you know, would hate to see the pain that I was in, the anguish, and say, you know, you're not a failure if you give up on the if there's something else that you want to go do.
Right.
It's all right, you know. Don't think that, you know, you have to keep at it to avoid being some kind of failure or something like that. And I actually remember saying one time, I would, if there was anything else I could do, you know. And now, of course, this is 15 years after that, and I have a lot more marketable skills than almost anybody I come into contact with.
I know, right?
Because of just doing everything myself in so many, and loving to learn. And I think that that's, I was wondering for myself how far back could I trace this? And I always liked, you know, I was always putting together little projects or little plays or doing things like this. But one of the real formative opportunities that I had from a scholastic setting, and this was what I was thinking, was imagine if we could encourage that kind of education.
Entrepreneurial.
Because so much education, right, is standardized testing. It's you've got to reach this, you've got to do this.
Rote memory crap.
Which is being taught to you how to do it.
Yeah.
And I did in high school a lot of speech and debate. And, you know, let's not mince words. I was extraordinary. 2-time national championship qualifier. I mean, you know, don't kid yourself.
I'm not kidding anyone.
But I had a coach, Sharon Prefontaine, for 3 years, who was a fantastic teacher and a really good mentor and a wonderful friend. And one of the things that was so great was that she did not have a debate background. She had a great speech background, but not debate, and especially not Oxford debate, which is a team debate, policy debate. And most of the schools we would compete against had both a speech coach and a debate coach, and probably had research teams. I did not go to a private school.
Right.
I went to a public school.
Look at you
so
go.
Resources were more limited, although, you know, again, not to mess around, it's kind of a country club of public schools.
Right.
But still, I wasn't inner city, you know. I wasn't raised the son of sharecroppers. Or was I? Maybe I was part of the outreach program from the country club high school. Nevertheless, you know, I was. It's still about who against whom you're competing.
Yes.
And that's why I love those movies a little bit to this day, that are the lawyer with the independent firm who has maybe one clerk and one, you know, grizzled secretary who's been with them since the beginning, and they've got to take on the big law firm with hundreds of lawyers deep who are just burying them in paperwork, right? This was what debate was like for me, and I loved it. And one of the great things that Sharon did for us, when my partner and I, Sayuri Oyama and I, senior year, we had made the final round of an invitational tournament. And we lost in the finals, but I mean, it was extraordinary that we got that far. And I don't think we knew we could get that far, beating all the top prep schools in the state and throughout the West. And she pulled me aside afterwards. I was exhausted as I had ever been at that point, to the point of just tears.
Yeah.
And She said then, and then she said again at the end of the year, really wanted this to take home to realize how much of this we had just done ourselves, that we had learned how to do all this ourselves.
Wow.
And that, that you know, that probably set us apart from so many of the people against whom we were competing.
Interesting.
And again, wouldn't it be great if more education was that way?
Yeah.
Creating this framework for people to really learn how to do it themselves.
Well, and this is the thing. I mean, it's sort of like I always saw school as just a social opportunity, and the actual real learning went on outside of the class, where I would go, you know, research and learn these things on one's own volition. Right. Right? And I don't know.
If education could be thought of as where we learn how to learn, where we develop the skills to learn,
right,
and to process rather than to be tested on things, the knowledge,
yeah,
that we're expected to retain,
yeah.
Like, if we could figure out a way to test, develop, encourage, nurture, and grow
systems,
people's learning process,
yes. How would that work?
That, and however it would work, it actually would work, and it would serve them through their
the
whole
rest of the
lives.
Day. Yes,
right?
Exactly. Because then they could go off into any field and learn whatever the hell they wanted. Right?
And this is, by the way, your ChilPak Hollywood Hour, yes, where you learn all about school closings and celebrity deaths.
Right. And what celebrity deaths?
Well, no, I just, you know, your artwork.
Oh.
This week, you were not the only one doing artwork this week. Our fan, loyal listener, good friend, Bob Pliskin,
yes,
really did himself proud this week.
Yes, he sure
did us proud with a series of ChilPak Hollywood Hour artworks.
Logo, mono, yes.
Some of which are just great. How about the noir ones with the Eastern Columbia?
Oh, my gosh.
And podcasting can be murder.
Yes, with the gun. Like,
oh,
that
that's the 3D one. Now in 3D.
Yeah, that's
hilarious.
Oh,
so much great stuff.
Oh, so, if you, where we could see that would be.
I'll put them again all on
Facebook.
Facebook.com, yeah. ChilPak Hollywood. I'll update all our profile pics.
You know,
no, you know.
This is our show where we leave MySpace, isn't it?
I feel like maybe it is.
Yes. This is the one where we say goodbye to MySpace.
Yeah. If anybody doesn't want us to say goodbye to MySpace, let us know.
Send us an email.
But you can write us at chilpakhollywood@yahoo.com. Though if you don't want us to leave MySpace, I'd suggest you actually write us on MySpace. Because if you write us somewhere else, you're telling us you don't need MySpace.
That's an excellent
so
part.
We are at MySpace, myspace.com/ChilPak Hollywood.
And it's a diminishing return every
right,
time.
Right. I mean, at the very least, we'll keep the page there. We'll have a player that always plays the current episode.
But we won't
interact there. Right now, myspace.com/ChilPak Hollywood. Of course, it's facebook.com/ChilPak Hollywood.
Yeah.
Write us. ChilPakHollywood@yahoo.com. And for those of you who think it's been a fast hour, no, I'm giving all the IDs here at the midpoint because it just came up naturally.
Right,
it's an organic flow.
We don't script these shows. Well, there's no
heavens no. There's heavens no.
We barely
to
have
a fault.
To a fault.
I was in the process of doing that when I dropped the phone in the toilet.
We have so much to talk about.
So, are there any other ideas? Oh, well, of course, chillpackhollywood.com.
Good.com.
C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K, Hollywood.com, where you can download or stream the shows that we do and subscribe via iTunes. You can't chat. There's no chat function. You're just throwing out words. Like, Three's Company. It's like running charades with you right now.
I thought, well.
And we're constantly adding some past episodes.
Yes.
Which I'll talk about again a little bit towards the end of the show, because we got a question from a listener about
Dang.
That.
Oh, yeah.
So chillpackhollywood.com. And we should just, again, thank Jackalope Radio.
Yes.
And the Talk Superstation, talksuperstation.com, for, first of all, being friends of the show, for carrying the show,
yes,
and for carrying the show when we were especially having some technical problems a couple months ago.
Yes.
So thanks.
Saved our bacon.
To all of you who put the show on there and promote the show and listen to us through there.
Yes.
But Bob Pliskin, wow, you really kind of, especially in a week where we were both
swamped.
Hitting the wall. You know how you hit the wall and you get through the wall and then you really find your second wind?
Yeah.
I found that you also can then find a second wall and a third wall and a fourth wall, and you exactly. just keep hitting the walls.
And that fourth wall is actually harder than the third wall.
Well, because when you break the fourth wall, you see the audience.
That's right.
Boom!
See what you did?
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm like an animal right before death. I'm getting this surge of energy.
Yeah, like when you freeze to death and suddenly it's really warm. That's what it's like.
We didn't talk about this last week.
No.
You went to Europe for a few days, continent.
A couple days, yes. Saw the continent.
From London. Where'd you go?
Went to Brussels and then to Den Bosch.
Where is that?
Den Bosch is in the Netherlands.
Okay. You were visiting our friend Linda Van Manen?
Yes, she was there and chatted briefly, but it got lost. That's the funny thing.
You got lost.
Well, yeah, because from Brussels, I said I'd like to get a train to Den Bosch, and I mispronounced Den Bosch, and they heard Den Bosch. So I took a small train to Cathedral of the Bush, which is its actual translation, which is only 59 minutes outside of Brussels, which we then stood and looked around and realized we were not anywhere near Den Bosch, which is, in fact, 2.5 hours north. And we hadn't even left Belgium yet. So hilarity ensued. We had to go back to Brussels, get another train ticket. That was a 9 euro whoopsie that we all laughed about.
What was there anything particularly surprising on the trip that delighted you?
So much. There was, of course, the art galleries.
Well, this was what I was wondering. I figured you couldn't resist hitting some galleries.
Could not resist. We went to, of course, the major one in Brussels. The what's it called? The Metro, not the Metro. It's the major one that has all the Dutch masters in there, and the rare Dutch masters like the Van Loons and the
Dick Van Dyke,
Dick Van Dyke,
no.
And the Hells, and of course De Bosch himself, the Hieronius Bosch, who lived in Den Bosch, and who you know his work because it's very surreal. There's many monsters and characters eating humans and sort of long-legged limb things. And you can actually buy them now in 3D porcelain. And we bought one of the Bosch monsters.
Wow.
That now sits on our shelf over there. I'll show it to you later. It's pretty cool.
I, in London, took a couple hours before meeting you and Miss mm-hmm. Ballooniverse and
right.
Patty and John K. Steele for dinner and went to the Miro exhibit.
At the Tate.
At the Tate Modern. Uh-huh. And, of course, Miro is one of my favorite
I did not
artists.
Know that.
And even I was not aware of really, again, the versatility throughout
scope
the long
work.
Career.
Huge long career.
And that long career was represented, each phase of that long career was represented through the 9, 10, 12 rooms, whatever,
wow.
whatever it was. And so it was fun to stroll through.
Uh-huh.
It was a little underwhelming. I would have thought that such a but it felt more like a survey course.
Oh.
You know?
Here's the best of kind of thing?
Or just, you know, sampling.
Yeah.
And I didn't even feel it was the best of.
Oh.
That's the other thing.
Oh.
There was one room, though, that had a series of Miro's just color paintings with the imperfect line or imperfect shape in the middle of the color. Just almost like
cool.
somebody had gone through, you know,
graffitied
after with just a line through it afterwards. And it was a circular room. The paintings, equidistant from each other, large canvases with these colors. The energy in that room
wow.
from those paintings. I mean, the energy
oh,
emanating
right
is palpable.
Wow.
It really color really does generate energy.
Absolutely.
It was really quite extraordinary.
Huh.
And so that was fun. What was also really cool, and I told you this, but the lovely and never lovelier than in person, really, Saffron Burrows.
Uh-huh.
Really charming actress. And, of course, I particularly have a soft spot because she starred for a while on Boston Legal.
Of course.
Along with your friend Gary Anthony Williams, our guest on a future installment
show.
Of
Absolutely.
Your Chillback Hollywood
Can't
Hour.
Can't wait.
So we had just recorded the show with Gary Anthony Williams, and this woman passes me in the gallery, and I'm looking eye to shoulder with a woman, and I think to myself, seriously, That's got to be Saffron Burroughs. I don't know that Saffron Burroughs lives in London. I don't know. I mean, I know she's from there. But I just, all I think is willowy woman, well-dressed, towering above me. Must be Saffron Burroughs.
You did not even see her face just by her shoulder. I just knew. Shoulder.
And so I looked back to see, to make sure it was Saffron Burroughs. And it was and it was her. And I've just got to say, I don't know. You know, it's always just, I don't know. It makes me feel warm when I see someone who, of course, very attractive on screen and everything.
Yes.
And then you see them in real life, not done up to be seen.
Right.
Either.
Right. Hanging out in a gallery.
More beautiful, more breathtaking than on screen.
Right.
Than on screen. With teams of, you know, people making her look at best. Probably network marketing departments saying where every single hair needs to be because this is what's going to give the biggest appeal. Boy, just her walking through a gallery, a sight to behold.
Look at that.
Beautiful. Boy, what else do we want to...
I don't know. We've gotten into a whole art
series. I guess talking about... Yeah, we did. I mean,
I was not prepared for a long art lecture. Oh, speaking of the tape, by the way, is the porcelain sunflower seed still on the floor there?
I think so.
Yeah, they were going to remove those. There are, 2 million hand-painted porcelain seeds?
I think so.
I know we talked about that, but I couldn't remember the outcome.
Now I can't remember whether it was here this time or the last time I was there.
Right. Oh, well, we'll have to look that up.
Well, this all, it all kind of flowed perfectly. It was a nice art excursion for us for a couple of weeks. Now, we do have some news, though, too. You know, on my flight back from London, Mr. Hugh Grant was on the plane. And you know, this is kind of a big deal for me because I wouldn't say that he's man crush for me.
That's good.
He's more guilty pleasure, maybe, in a way, in the sense, not that he's not a very gifted performer, of course, very charming. I would say that many of the movies he's been in are my guilty pleasures. The tissue box viewing each year I do of Love Actually, the sobbing uncontrollably. Well, About a Boy is a great movie.
Great movie.
Period.
Yeah.
Less so maybe Music and Lyrics, which I've seen going on a dozen times.
Dozen times. That's always on TV.
Because, you know, Hugh Grant is a pop star. Of course, I'm there.
oh, dear.
But the other thing about it is that I feel that Hugh Grant and I are very similar in many ways. I feel that it's got to be,
you know what?
Me walking through that plane had to be a little bit for him eerie, like looking in a mirror. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that mirror where he suddenly...
I was wondering, though, what is he doing on this British Airways flight?
Okay.
Going
to Los Angeles.
Not rare. Certainly... when was the last you heard about Hugh Grant? I mean, certainly he was not coming to Los Angeles to get to work on that sequel to Did You Hear About the Morgans? That was
happening. Maybe he was coming to talk to his agent.
So why did he... Right, but of course, but why? What that couldn't happen through Skype?
Well...
Because I would think as Hugh Grant's agent, really, at this point, maybe I would just say, Hugh... Feel free to Skype. Skype on in. So something had to be going on. And indeed, 2 days later, we hear, right about midnight, Nikki Fink breaks the story that he was here for secret negotiations to replace Charlie Sheen on 2.5 Men.
Wow.
More than $1 million an episode.
Sheesh.
The network was willing, with Hugh Grant signing, to commit to 4 more years of the show.
Holy crap.
So guaranteed $100 million. The sort of paydays he's not going to be getting from movies
anymore.
Totally
not. No.
And... what Nikki Fink actually wrote, I must echo, which is, that's a show I actually would watch.
Yeah.
Now, who knows whether it would end up being good, but that's an interesting casting
idea. It sure is.
Now, at the last minute, it broke apart, and it did not break apart over money.
No, because that seemed like a good deal.
He had apparently had 2 creative meetings that he said went very well. But then he just got on a plane and he left. And representatives say that it's just he couldn't wrap his head around doing TV. The schedule, he couldn't do it. Maybe that's true, although I think, you wrap your head around 20 hours of transatlantic flying, maybe you wrap your head around
doing
TV.
Maybe you think about that. And not only that, I got to say, sitcom TV is much different than episodic.
Sure.
Because doing episodic, you shoot for long, long hours till you get all of those pages down. With with the sitcoms, you come in on a Thursday for a Tuesday a read through, with Thursdays a rehearsal, and Friday you shoot in front of a live audience, and that's it. And you shoot, and then it's the writers who stay up till 4 a.m. getting the jokes right. But for the actor on a sitcom, it's way easier. You know, it's the inverse, because writers on a dramatic series just can sort of write, you know, 10, 12, 15-hour days. But they don't have to stay there throughout the night shooting all that stuff. And when production, you know, goes to hell, it's the writers who are sleeping, not the actors. And that's the inverse on when it comes to sitcoms.
It must be changing, though, a little bit in terms of most sitcoms now are single camera and kind of shot like dramas. Yeah, so that's got to be changing.
It's a bit changing.
Of course, Two and a Half Men is a traditional sitcom.
Yeah, that's shot in front of a live audience.
So that broke apart, and of course, we have no verification on this from the inside, as far as you know. However, you know, the joke, and when Phil Lernis jokes, there's usually some kind of truth in it.
Truth, Phil. Here it comes.
You know, that not being able to wrap his head around the show must mean that he finally met Chuck Lorre, the showrunner, right? I mean, who wants to work with this guy? $100 million. What does $100 million not buy you? 4 years of working with that guy, maybe.
Right. I can't believe in one meeting that could break down, that you would see it. I mean, you would think that he would try to be on his best behavior.
Yeah, I don't know,
to
but
hold
boy.
That together. Well,
anyway, so then what happens is they quickly have to do an about face, save face. So the next day it's announced Ashton Kutcher's deal is signed to replace Charlie Sheen in Two and a Half Men. I thought Ashton Kutcher had a movie career, which is an odd thing for him to do. It begged the question that a lot of people kind of misinterpreted when I said it. But so Ashton Kutcher replaces Charlie Sheen on Two and a Half Men. Who's playing the half man? Because seriously, Ashton Kutcher, I don't know what Ashton Kutcher's age is. I guess he is probably in his 30s, right? But he is very youthful. He's still playing the really youthful lead, effectively. And the boy in Two and a Half Men, that half man, is growing up rapidly.
Rapidly. He's seeming like a 25-year-old now.
So it feels to me like there is clearly a generational difference between John Cryer and Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this all seems...
It's going to be so weird, that dynamic. I'm not even going to be able to...
And I know that they love the idea. And, you know, people are pointing out demographically, oh, he's got 6 million followers on Twitter. The young people love him. They'll follow him to that show. Will they follow him to a show that their parents love? I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't... And, you know...
And clearly they're not committing to it for 4 more years, so there's got to be some doubt about it. I mean... Yeah. It just doesn't seem like if Two and a Half Men is the show that your parents loved and you weren't watching it, it doesn't seem to me Ashton Kutcher being on it is going to suddenly make your parents' favorite show cool.
Yeah, no. In fact, it's going to seem jarringly uncool to all involved.
And could make him jarringly uncool.
Well, 6 million followers may not...
May turn out to be wrong. To bastardize the old Elvis.
You see what you said?
Quote. Now, the other thing that we didn't really get to touch on, but it came up just before we were in London, and people were asking us about this whatever.
Let's talk about
and
it.
I wanted to, because we've talked about this a long time ago in the past, but the White House finally releases Barack Obama's full form, and I say the White House, but of course, it's really the state of Hawaii, right? Release a full form
birth certificate. Yes, we got to talk about this.
Now, we all both had kind of always rolled our heads about this birther thing because, you know, this criticism of the birth certificate being given out and how phony that, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And it was like, that's how Hawaii does it.
Yeah.
I mean, what he had always been showing is what was given. You can go back in time all the way to then. The birth notices appeared legally as they were supposed to in the local papers when it was. You know, this was a whole lot of nothing, conspiracy
theory.
And
he had a passport. I mean, he traveled internationally, so...
So the thing to me is, you know, this... I was disappointed when clearly the White House must have put enough pressure on Hawaii to make an exception and release this long form, which they never do.
Right.
And I just felt kind of disappointed that
That took up airtime?
Well, yeah, and why now? Right. You know, if you were ever going to do it, why wouldn't you do it then? Why do it now? Especially because it doesn't, nor in a sense should it, placate the birthers at all anyway.
Right.
I am not one of them. I know for, you know, I know that, that what we were shown before was real. At the same time, though, if I was a conspiracy guy, if I did think that that had been phony, if it hadn't been enough, I would not be satisfied now.
Yeah.
Not so long after the fact, not after this. And of course, you've got to know that they're all going to disbelieve it anyway. They're all right. going to pick it apart. They're all going to say it looks phony for a lot of logical reasons. But I got to tell you, I pulled out my birth certificate.
You did.
I think if I didn't know it was my birth certificate, I'd think it was phony. Old documents
look phony.
Look phony.
Yeah, there's no.
Dear God,
we didn't really anticipate the.
Yeah, we didn't anticipate the document age.
Right.
There weren't photocopiers. There weren't these. Yeah. We didn't. Everything was about documentation.
Yeah.
It became that way, and it wasn't about that
back
then.
In the day.
And so, you know, so why? Now, and the only thing that I could come to was what we talked about at dinner that one night, which was it will not silence those people who disbelieve his citizenship. What it might do, though, and probably will do, is get a whole lot of people who didn't really have a dog in the fight one way or another,
yeah.
to just now go, okay, good. You know, let's just stop talking about it. It bores me.
Yes. Clearly it's taken up too much time and this is silly.
Yeah. And this, you know, and so then the people who do believe that it's phony get marginalized.
Yes.
Even further and get defined by it to a certain respect. Oh, you're a birther.
Yeah.
Like what I'm calling them, right? Like you're a birther.
Yeah,
you
right.
now can be defined by that. And as you know, my big thing about, you know, the people just love being able to find a way to eliminate someone from a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's a birther. So nothing that he says about anything
is going to have
is
any
relevant
yes.
to us at
I
all.
Know. And this
and nothing gets under my skin more than that. Makes me. I mean, we made a whole movie about let's stop doing that.
Right. And this is the thing. I think it also seemed to be the perfect arc of Donald Trump, mm-hmm. actually, because he sort of set himself up as the birther's advocate.
Right.
And then that comes out. Then the hilarious press. What's that? The press council meeting thing. Where,
oh, the annual correspondence.
Correspondence
dinner.
Where everybody tears into him, rips him a new one. And then today he announces he's not running.
Well, this, you and Lyle sometimes talk about this, about how sometimes the conspiracy theory itself is the conspiracy.
Right.
Now, I know there are people who believe, who truly do believe that, you know, he isn't an American citizen and they disbelieve the documentation of it. At the same time, you know, anything can be manipulated.
Absolutely.
Anything can. And it's entirely possible that things were manipulated to set Trump up to come off like a buffoon.
Like a buffoon. He was a front runner. He was 20 points ahead of everyone else, and now he's no longer running. Like, just left them in a wake. And who do you got? Newt Gingrich now, who's, you know, three wives in, each successively younger? I mean, that's going to be a tough...
It's really a very interesting thing, and it is a healthy response, right? Like, we try to take the response always of, you know, we'll, as human beings, we'll always have our knee-jerk reaction of, oh, God, that went wrong, right?
Right.
That went – and then you try to back off from and you go, okay, what's right about it? How can this serve in some way? If nothing, to get yourself out of the bad mood, because
right.
then that's only going to exacerbate further problems.
Yeah.
But if you can just get, okay, what's right about this? What serves? That's a healthy response to living our daily lives. It's also a very, very smart way to go through business, to go through marketing, to go through advertising. It's, oh my God, there's this conspiracy forming about this thing. Well, maybe sometimes we don't fight it. How can we use it?
Exactly.
Even when it's being directed at us.
Yeah.
How can we use it? That's a healthy response.
Totally.
It's also something that we should always keep in mind.
Absolutely.
Right? That all of this, all of our, what's the martial arts, right? Isn't martial arts the whole activity is to use your opponent's energy against them?
Right. You turn it on past them, or make it go through you or around you and back on them.
And and that's kind of what this whole thing feels like about why releasing the long form now.
Yeah.
Because if you knew that you were an American citizen, that your birth certificate was real, that all this is, at some point, I just think you'd ignore it, you know? And why now? You know, especially why now? Because, oh, by the way, you won.
Yeah, you won.
You won.
Yeah, exactly. There's now no...
You don't need it. You don't need to prove it.
And all that energy dissipates and collapses on itself.
Unless there's a payoff.
Yeah. So there you have it. And speaking of payoff, what's happening next weekend? May 21st. Should we talk?
Are we already talking about that?
Well, I think we might.
We
got viewer mail, though, don't we?
Viewer mail. Viewers? We have viewers now.
We have viewers.
Holy.
We're looking at our
Jesus.
Website. Right
well,
now.
Oh, we will. I want to hit something else, though, because of Obama, President Obama and election, and this is slipping into films, but it made me think of it. The movie Election.
Yes.
Alexander Payne, 1990s.
Very
classic
funny.
Film.
Yes.
Called by, what was it? Was it not Premiere Magazine? Maybe it was Entertainment Weekly. One of them, but one of the 10 best high school movies of all time.
Sure.
And Reese Witherspoon in, I think, Premiere Magazine, her performance was listed as one of the 50 greatest performances in cinema history.
So great.
And it is so great. And it's Matthew Broderick at the top of his game. Yeah. Alexander Payne, nominated for Best Screenplay along with Jim Taylor for it. A fantastic movie, high school comedy, Election, about a presidential student body election. It was long rumored that the ending to the film was not the original ending.
What?
That the film was finished. It sat for a year before they changed the ending and finally released it.
Really?
Because the ending to the novel is quite different. Now, that's not big news because
often you change the ending.
It turns out that Alexander Payne did direct and shoot an ending that was completely true and faithful to the novel.
Oh.
And it didn't test well. And what's interesting is the ending that they ended up releasing, much darker. Which usually isn't the way after test audiences. And so it's
being released.
And you know, what I always remember was Alexander Payne and I used to talk 10 years before that or about the movie Heathers, another high school comedy, that he felt chickened out in its ending by not going darker, instead by lightening up.
How about
when
that?
The high school should have been blown up in Heathers.
Wow.
And if that's a spoiler alert, Jesus, for a movie called Heathers from a quarter century ago.
I haven't seen it.
Anyway, spoiler alert. What I thought was amazing was that the original ending is available for viewing, at least it was, a few days ago, on YouTube.
Wow.
And this is the part that I just love about it, you know, documentation and things coming up. And this is why it kind of fits with this whole conversation. Not on any DVD release, not as any bonus features or special. Somebody was at the Pasadena swap meet at the Rose Bowl.
What?
Bought a copy of Election on VHS, used VHS. Turned out it was a work print of the movie.
No way.
Labeled Election. And it had it on there, and they've uploaded the ending to YouTube.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing, because I go to that swap meet all the time at Pasadena at the Rose Bowl.
Looking for Alexander Payne stuff.
And that's all I look for. And use surfboards.
Did you ever get the official program from the...
No.
Interesting.
Yes. Thanks for that, by the
way. So, yeah. So this coming Saturday... We have quite the weekend lined up.
Yes.
But it's sort of the apex of it is 7 p.m. at the Retro Dome in San Jose, California. The
Please.
U.S. premiere of our documentary, The Truth Is Out There. Dean Haglund will be there. Phil Lernis will be there. Producer Lyle Scozzi will be there. We have a special guest emceeing.
Wow.
Being the mistress of ceremonies at the event. The Retro Dome is this amazing film and stage venue.
Which we'll be using both of.
After a brief intermission at 10 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
Your friends in podcasting, Dean Haglund, Phil Lernis, taking the stage for a live recording of Your Chill Pack Hollywood, an hour in front of an audience.
An audience.
For exactly 1 hour, we will answer questions and we'll share stories of our adventures on the road.
Yes.
You can link to tickets through truth-is-out-there.com.
Yes.
You can also
get
tickets at truthmovieuspremiere.com. That's truthmovieuspremiere.eventbrite.com.
Look at that.
And that's the only place you can get tickets until 1 hour before the screening starts. So I would suggest, if you want to be in your seat by start time,
get
the tickets in advance.
Yes.
TruthMovieUSPremiere.eventbrite.com. Anyone in the Bay Area, please come out. Please see it. We want to meet you. We want you to share in this. We think it's going to be a really, really fun night.
Yeah.
And the more the merrier.
Absolutely. It'll be a good way to connect to everyone. So that's this Saturday, May 21st.
We're hitting the road on Friday, doing a little road trip.
Look at
us.
We'll hit
some spots in the Bay Area. And we have another adventure that we're hoping to report back on soon on Sunday, as soon as we hit Beverly Hills.
Oh,
a little adventure maybe involving Mitch Pileggi.
Wouldn't that be something?
So there's some wonderful hints. We have just a couple minutes for me to set up what I think could be a good discussion for next week.
Okay.
It's a question from our listener, Caroline. I hope I'm not going to butcher the name, but I'm going to say it in a lovely way.
Anyway. Right.
That's Caroline Sabocat.
Oh.
And Caro, if I'm saying it wrong, please forgive me.
But you said it.
But it's a beautiful name to read, to actually literally see the name.
Yes.
It is. It's so beautiful. Caroline, like Caroline without the E.
Right.
And then Sabokat. It's a beautiful name. It's just, it's so. So anyway, she wrote, Dear Dean, Dear Phil.
That's both of us.
I heard on your show that there's a possibility to get certain episodes personally sent to us as long as they're not yet back up. Well, a friend of mine is doing a thesis on Mulholland Drive for university. And I told him about the episode the two of you discussed a little bit about David Lynch. I think we actually have probably talked about him as much as we've talked about either of us.
I know, it's true.
So we have a lot of episodes.
Yes.
I couldn't remember all of the discussion, but I think Dean said something about Lynch being like someone who throws paint at a wall and then sees what comes out.
Yeah, spaghetti, I actually said.
Unfortunately, I don't remember which episode. But maybe one of you remembers, would be great to be able to send the show to my friend.
Okay.
So I'm going to look that up, Caro, and I bring this up because, again, if anybody has a specific episode they would like while we are in the long, arduous process of restoring all our back catalog of shows to ChillPackHollywood.com, of course we'll be happy to send them. I also thought, since someone asked, maybe we should take some time 2 weeks from now. Although the thesis might be done.
Might be done by then. But still, we can go start all over on a conversation about
maybe
David
we'll
Lynch.
Do this about maybe. About a pro and con.
I will list everything I hate about that guy.
David Lynch.
Yep.
And I'll talk about everything that I like about David Lynch. You can maybe talk about also what pieces of Lynch do you think work? If you've seen anything that he's done that does work, and I'll talk about what I've seen that doesn't work.
As
someone who is a fan
of
it. And
maybe we'll find some common ground.
So we will take that time. I think we'll do it 2 weeks from now because I think, obviously this coming week we're going to do the live show.
Live show, and then that's going
to
go up.
So 2 weeks, Caro, have your friend listening to his Chill Pack Hollywood Hour when we talk about that a little bit for part of the show. Anyone else, if there's shows you want, please let us know.
Or discussions you want us to have.
Absolutely. Questions. We're happy to answer them. And finally, I am almost ready to start sending out this special bonus anniversary show that I talked about. That's kind of not a best of. It's really funny. It's a really it tickles me no end. So
it's the Phil Tickler.
Excuse me. And so please, if you want this, you do get your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour for free every week. And we do. We are paying for this.
Yes.
We are paying to bring this show every month and every year to you.
And we have no advertisers.
And we have no advertisers. We will at some point, but we certainly want to do it in such a way where we're not interrupting the show by that. And of course, Chill Pack will always be part of the name as a reminder of the spirit, the do-it-yourself spirit that made this show possible.
Right.
That so many people, all of us are inventive, all of us are creative. We can all of us come up with simple, logical solutions to problems that seem very complex if we, especially if we encouraged each other to develop those skills,
right,
to trust our own instinct and our own unique abilities and our unique insight. And we each of us have the ability to solve these complex problems. And so that's why, even though ChillPack no longer exists in any commercial form, it is a great reminder of that spirit that must not be allowed to be extinguished and never will be able to extinguish, because life will out, creativity will out, and people all around us are constantly coming up with solutions to complex ideas. And let's be the vanguard that finds those solutions, that nurtures those solutions, that does the best we can to spread the word about those solutions. So that's your ChillPack Hollywood Hour.
Here I say.
And we do have this anniversary show, and if you would like a special anniversary show that will never be put online, never be made available except to the special and loyal listeners of your ChillPack Hollywood Hour, write us at ChillPackHollywood@yahoo.com. And for 99 cents,
that's what we say.
Like an iTunes thing,
think much of that.
We'll send you that show as well.
That'd be awesome.
Until next week, when we're back with a live show in front of an audience in San Jose, California. I'm Phil Lynch.
I'm Dean Haglund. See you then.